Hello and welcome to the Wednesday, March 6th, 2013 edition of the Sands and its Stumps and its Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm today recording from Baltimore, Maryland. Mark Hoffman today wrote a diary for our IPv6 focus month, talking about what he's finding down in Australia when he's auditing organizations. Now, he mentions that IPv6 really hasn't caught on yet in Australia, like in most parts of the world. What he, however, sees is that a lot of organizations use IPv6 without knowing that they use IPv6. And that's something certainly typical with most operating systems using IPv6 and for some features actually requiring it, for example, Windows Direct Access is one of these features that really only works with IPv6, and that's why Windows 7, for example, heavily relies on tunneling technologies like Teredo. So really one of the first things that you should do is enumerate all the devices in your network that already use IPv6, figure out how to protect them, what kind of firewalls you need, for example, to make sure that they're not accessible from the outside. So, for example, you may have to look at the different tunneling mechanisms that are being used by IPv6 and make sure they're controlled sufficiently. Then, of course, once you get started with IPv6, the other problem comes up: which of your devices cannot support IPv6 and still have to be supported by some kind of IPv4 legacy network. Mark is also mentioning that he does see ISPs starting to push IPv6. That's something I've personally seen with my Comcast connection, for example. Comcast, a couple weeks ago, I think I mentioned it already, pushed a new firmware to my modem that will then support IPv6, and it's supposed to roll out IPv6 in the near future. And then we got an interesting command in the good old Unix, sudo command. Sudo allows administrators to assign users very specific privileges, and these privileges are listed in a sudoers file. Then these users can execute certain commands as an administrator, as a root, or as another user. Now, this is heavily used, for example, in Ubuntu or in OS X. In these operating systems, the user should never really log in as root. Instead, they use sudo to do whatever they need to do as root. This gives you an audit trail and then also allows you to limit what these users can do. Whenever you use sudo, you have to enter your password. Now, this gets old pretty quickly, so what usually happens is that you do set a certain timeout, and if you execute multiple commands within this timeout, the password is not required again. In order to track this timeout, there's a timestamp file. Now, this timestamp file will then allow sudo to track when was the last time that you used sudo. And there's a special sudo command, sudo-k, that resets this timestamp file, essentially to invalidate it, but not to delete it. And, well, once it's invalidated, the timestamp inside the file is zero, which is the Unix epoch, or January 1st, 1970. The vulnerability is now if a user is able to change the system time to January 1st, 1970, then they're able to use sudo again without having to enter the password, kind of eliminating the protection by having the password expire. Now, the attack scenario is a little bit complex here, and that's why it hasn't been fixed so far, even though sudo is a pretty old command. The victim would have to log in and use sudo and then invalidate its timestamp file by using the sudo-k file. This would leave the timestamp file in a vulnerable position. Then a second user would walk up, for example, to the terminal in which this user is logged in, use that user's terminal, and then change the time on the system to January 1st, 1970. And then this user, who has no idea what the password is, will be able to run commands using sudo. This scenario is possible in Ubuntu. In Ubuntu, users are able to change the timestamp. It may be possible in OS X. In OS X, by default, users are able to change the system time, but it's easy to protect that, and it's sort of standard best practice to require an administrator password in order to change the system time. And then while we're talking vulnerabilities, an interesting issue with D-Link routers. Certain D-Link routers have a vulnerability that exposes the password via the web-based interface. All an attacker has to do is to go to a specific URL, and then the password will be revealed. Essentially, the attacker is able to download the configuration file. Now, D-Link patched the vulnerability, but told nobody about it. There is a newer version of the firmware that is no longer vulnerable, but the change log for this firmware makes no mention of the fixing this particular vulnerability, and also the D-Link security page doesn't mention that this particular vulnerability was fixed. I guess the lesson here is you should update firmwares even if there is no specific security content that is being advertised as being patched. If you have seen this in the past where security flaws were patched silently like this. And well, we can't end this podcast without mentioning Java. A malicious but validly signed Java applet was found. This particular Java application was signed using a stolen key. The key actually has been posted to Pastebin for a while, and GoDaddy, who originally issued this key, did revoke it, but turns out by default Java is not checking certificate revocation lists, and this stolen certificate is still able to sign current applications. Well, that's it for today, so thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.